Good morning, everybody. Welcome and thank you for coming. The brief that I have been given for this year is to talk about a contemporary issue. You may have noticed in last Friday's Jerusalem Post and other publications, there was a sack given by the Rabbanei Beit Hillel, which is a group of rabbis in different communities and institutions in Eretz Israel. There was a sack given that women are halachically permitted to be poskot halacha, to rule in matters of halachic sack, and as well as having the piece in the paper for the general public, they published a tshuva, a detailed analysis of this with footnotes, and I figured if this wasn't a contemporary issue, what is? It's just, if you like, hit the papers, although, as we'll see, it's not a new issue at all. It's actually quite an old issue, but many contemporary issues really are much older issues. So I'd like to analyze that with you today, look at some of the issues involved, some of the things that they're saying, some of the things that other people are saying, and then we can analyze whether this is, if you like, the shape of things to come, or just a blip on the screen. If you remember, I gave two previous shirim in this forum. The last one was a shir on Har HaBayit. Well, the shir wasn't on Har HaBayit. That would have been pretty much the end result of the shir. Maybe one day, Be'ezrat Hashem. But the shir was about Har HaBayit, and we had a really fast whistle-stop tour through the issues of going on to Har HaBayit these days. The first shir, if you remember back that far, back in early December, I went through four different categories of halachic change, which I think is relevant for this shir as well. Let me just recap maybe the first minute what I said in that first shir about different categories of halachic change. I said basically there were four different types of halachic innovation, and whenever something new comes up, we need to try and work out which of these four boxes the new idea fits into so that we can work out how to analyze it and address it, because they're all quite different. The most extreme, I said, was when a person or an idea sought to undermine the mitzvah system in Torah Shebichtav, in the Torah itself, sought to, if you like, abandon a mitzvah or include a new mitzvah or something of that nature. That is, if you like, the most extreme version of halachic change. A lower level to that would be where a person is not trying to undermine the Torah Shebichtav, but they are, if you like, trying to change the Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning the chasimat hashas. The Chasimat HaShas, which is the accepting by the Jewish people of the Talmud as the ultimate arbiter of Jewish law. If a person wished to say, no, we wish to turn over a din in the Talmud, let's try, you know, let's make a minyan of five men and five women, not just 10 men, like the Gemara says there should be. That is a second level, if you like, of innovation halachic change. A third level, I said, was where someone says, no, we don't wish to overturn the mitzvah system or indeed the Gemara. But there are different opinions in the halachic poskim, and even though there is a consensus in halacha over the last, let's say, 1700 years since the Talmud, even though there is a consensus that the halachic psak goes this way, we feel that there are minority opinions to rely on that we should change that consensus without overriding, if you like, the system as a whole. That is a third level. And the fourth level I talked about was where really there is no halachic consensus. There's just a new thing that we never had before for various different reasons. We're not trying to override the Torah, we're not trying to override the Gemara, we're not even trying to override the halachic consensus. We're just dealing with a new phenomenon, and the question is, even though we never did it before, should we start to do it now? That was the fourth category. I'm not going to go through all of the things, obviously, that I said then, and you can get hold of the source sheet, and if you don't have it, you can email me, and I'll be happy to send it to you. There's even a recording of it somewhere around. I'll be able to get to you as well. But with that in mind, let's have a look at this issue that we're dealing with today, which is, can women give rulings in halakha? And we'll decide as we go through which box this falls into. And that will, of course, determine how we judge it and how we analyze it. Let's start from the very beginning. Now, we are not asking the question today, should women rule in halakha? That's a different question, which maybe we can address at the end. We're not addressing the question, can or should women be community rabbis? Which, although there is a related issue there, that's also something we can talk about as we go through. But we are specifically dealing with the question of psak halakha. And there is quite a lot of pressure from certain people for women to be more involved in the process of halakhic life, of halakhic ruling. Where is that pressure coming from? From a few places. Number one, there are an enormously, there's a growing, and not enormous, but there's a growing and significant number of women now who are highly educated in matters of halakha and Torah generally. Not just, and I'm not saying just as a small thing, from the high school system, but also from basically the equivalent of yeshivot, where women have been sitting and learning for many, many years, learning authentic Torah from authentic rabbinic sources. And the question is, where do these women go with that learning? Where does that take them? How can that talent be used most effectively in the community? They want to use that talent. Does the community need that talent? And how can that be achieved? How can we stop these women from, if you like, hitting their heads on the glass ceiling, which until now you've been allowed to learn, but now we're, if you like, going to artificially cap that off and stop that from going further. There are some people who feel, again, this is not my specific opinion, I'm just giving you the general issues. Some people feel that if there were more women qualified in areas of halakha and available in areas of halakha, then there would be other women who were more willing to go to those people to live a more halakhic lifestyle. There are issues, especially to do with taraf and mishpacha, where women might feel uncomfortable. For whatever reason, maybe more than they used to do, or maybe there are more women involved in this than there used to be. Women may feel uncomfortable going to men to deal with these personal issues, and maybe more comfortable going to women who are suitably qualified to deal with this. And we may indeed bring more women into the halachic realm, if you like, if there are women available to rule on halakha. These are many of the reasons which are given to try and, if you like, push this more of the should question, should women rule in halakha? These are the issues which are being pushed forward on that side. Of course, for a number of years now, we've had yoetzot halakha. We've had the yoetzet halakha system, where women, set up by Rav Henkin and Rabbi Haftig and Nishmat, etc., where women are available by phone, online, in person, to advise your eitzah rather than sack, to advise on issues specifically to do with taraf mishpacha, fertility issues, etc. And that has become quite a big system itself, which is controversial in some areas of the Jewish people. But they've always been a pain to say, we are not poskot halakha, we are yoetzot halakha. We give advice, you have to go to a rav for eitzah. And you'll see that very clearly on their websites when you speak to those people. This issue of this ruling of Beit Hillel says, well, why can't you be poskot halakha? Why is Eitza the only thing that a woman can give? Why not Psak Halakha? Of course, there are those on the other side of the spectrum who say this is just the beginning of a slippery slope towards women rabbis. This is giving into an egalitarian agenda. This is coming from, or Dayanut. We'll see Dayanut less of an issue because we'll see a clearer halachic Psak on the issue of whether women are capable or not capable, are eligible or not in Halakha to be Dayanim or Dayanut. But there are people who feel that this is being pushed by the wrong agenda. And that's something I don't really want to talk about a lot now, and we can maybe talk about it at the end if we have a few minutes. Let's have a look at the first two issues, which are, if you like, introductory, and we'll get into the main subject of women ruling in halakha. Can a woman have a smicha? So, of course, there are two types of smicha, which is critical. The original smicha, which was given by Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua, and passed down in order to make a person eligible to be on the Sanhedrin, works in the following way. Have a look in the Rambam in source number 1. Moshe Rabbeinu Samach Yoshua B'yad. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we've seen the Pesukim, gave an ordination to Yoshua by hand. Shneimad, it says, V'yismach et yada, alav v'yitzaveh. He put his hands on him and he commanded him. V'kein ha-shivim zikeinim, similarly the 70 elders on the first Sanhedrin, Moshe Rabbeinu Samcham, he gave them smicha. V'sharta aleim shechina, and there was a shechina now resting upon these people. It's Parshas Va'aloicha, you've all seen the Psukim. Va'aloicha Nesekeinim Stamchol Acherim, and these in turn, these rabbis, these elders, gave smicha to others, Va'acherim La'acherim, and those others to others. But into Asmuchim Ish Mi Pi'ish, and there was a chain of tradition of smicha, person from Ish Mi Pi'ish, man from man, Ad Beis Dino Shel Yoshua, it goes all the way back up to Yoshua, Ad Beis Dino Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, etc., etc., all the way down to whoever was in the Sanhedrin. Says the Rambam, it continues for that. Keisad hiat smicha, ledoiras. What is this smicha that goes through the generations? Lo sheyismichu yideihim al roish hazakein. Not that they put their hands anymore on the heads of the ordained rabbi. Ela shekarin loy rebbe. They call him rebbe, he gets the title rebbe. Va'omrim loy, and they say to him, Hari at somuch, you now have smicha. V'yesh lecha rishus ladun you now have official capability to be a dayan, afilu dine knasot, even dinim of knasot, which only someone with the original smicha could do, which dayanim today do not do anymore. Knasot is fines and various punishments of different kinds, corporal punishments and capital punishments, and these that we don't have in the halachic system anymore, because we don't have a Sanhedrin. This was the original smicha. Now nobody has this smicha today. This smicha has basically been lost for the last 1600 years, since Sanhedrin was abandoned, due to Roman pressure. There were attempts at different times in history, and I mentioned this, I think, in the first year, to re-establish the smicha, specifically in Sfat in the 16th century, where Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Girushi Sfarad, the Rosh Yosef Karo, and others, the Alshich, Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, wanted to re-establish the smicha system to kick-start the Sanhedrin once more, but that never succeeded for various reasons, and we do not have a Sanhedrin anymore. It's clear from this Rambam that in order to be on the Sanhedrin, you have to be a dayan. We have to be a halachic judge. You're a super judge, if you like. And it's clear, as we'll see soon, that a woman is ineligible in halacha to be a dayan. And therefore, it would be a very big leap indeed to be able to have a Sanhedrin, which consists of a group of men and women together, because the women would not be eligible to be dayanot, probably, because that would be needed to be, or we'll see why in a minute, needed to be on the smicha. However, on Sanhedrin, excuse me. However, smicha today is not that smicha. The smicha that the rabbis have today is of a completely different nature entirely. It started sometime after the Black Death, after the Black Plague, the bubonic plague in the 14th century, where there was such a lot of people killed. There was a shortage of rabbanim. 25% of the Jewish community died in the plague in the mid-1300s. An even greater percentage of the non-Jewish community, and there's all sorts of theories as to why that was. But one thing is for sure, we no longer had qualified rabbanim, and all sorts of people were springing up everywhere in Europe saying that they were rabbis of communities and they just weren't up to the job. And therefore they introduced this rabbinic qualification called smicha, not the original smicha, but a new smicha. Look at the Ramah in number 2. The Ramah writing in the 16th century, Inyan ha-smicha shenagu bizman azeh, the smicha today, not the original smicha, but what we have today, kinei she'edu kol ha'am she'igiyo lahora. It's first of all just so that people will know who is and who isn't qualified in hora'ah, it's a very important word, hora'ah, in psak, halakha. We need to know people who are qualified from those or not. U'mashimorahu b'rishus rabbi, and also that what they're teaching has the permission of their rav. In other words, you're not allowed to pass in halacha in front, as it were, of your rav. So while your rav is still alive, you are not allowed to go out there and be an independent rav yourself, unless the rav gives you permission, which is the modern day smicha. Well, again, in Kfar Meis Rabbi, so he says, if the Rav has already passed away, then as long as he's qualified, he doesn't need the smicha, etc. So today's smicha is basically a product of a qualification, of someone who has what it takes to paskan halacha, and has the permission of their Rav to do so. The question, therefore, will be, would a woman today be allowed to have this smicha? And again, Beit Hillel are not talking about giving smicha, because it's a very loaded word. The word smicha will start everybody get everybody excited and upset about rabbis and women rabbis, etc. They're talking about psak. But is there really a difference between the two? We'll see that there is certainly a difference between being a community rabbi and giving up psak. We'll talk about that later on. But in terms of the modern-day smicha, it seems from the Ramah to be a product of qualification. If you're qualified, you can get it, as long as your rav doesn't mind, as long as your rav gives permission. But if you're not qualified, you can't. It's not as obvious from the source that a woman would not be able to take a modern-day smicha, even though she wouldn't be allowed, of course, to be on the smicha on the Sanhedrin from what we've seen so far. But again, let's not use the word smicha because it's too emotive. Let's talk about psak halacha. Now, we talked about the idea of a woman being a dayan. Why can a woman not be a dayanet? Have a look at number 3. It's quite straightforward. Sources. The Gemara in Shavuos says like this. Shavuos ha'edus no'egis ba'anashim v'lo ha'anashim. A shavua, and a witness, an oath by a witness in court, can only be made by a man and not by a woman. This is a din from the psukim, from the Torah, as it says, minami mili, where it's learned from the Tan Rabbanon, ba'amdu shnei ha'anashim. It is learned directly from the psukim anashim and not nashim, and therefore a woman is not qualified as a aid, as a witness in certain court proceedings. Of course, a woman is qualified as an aid in other areas of halakha, aid echad ne'eman ve'isurin. If one witness, as it were, not in court, but in life, comes along and says that something is kosher or not kosher, then it doesn't matter whether a person is a man or a woman. If my wife puts food on the table and tells the guests the food is fine, no one's going to turn around and say, well, we're not eating unless your husband says the food is fine. They would not be advised to ask me any questions about the food in the house at all, and therefore clearly that aid echad ne'eman ve'isurin. But in a court proceeding, not. Yes, any question?
Isn't there a difference between the Rishonim and the Achronim regarding women as dayanim?
We'll see in a second. We'll see in a minute how that works in the Rishonim. So a woman is clearly ineligible to serve as a witness in halakha in terms of certain court proceedings. That's very basic, that's a pasuk. In order to overturn that, you're really getting into the level one, or at least, or maybe certainly level two area of changing of innovation that we talked about before. Yes. How about a what? We'll get to Dvorah. Dvorah is going to be a very important part of our shiur today. Comes along the Shulchan Aruch and Paskins in number four. Isha psula ladun. A woman is also ineligible to be a dayan. Where do we get that from? So the Sma, the Sefer Mirah Say Naim, on the Shulchan Aruch number five says Isha psula ladun. Yalfina, we learn this from the fact that she's ineligible to be a witness. If she's ineligible to be a witness in court, she's ineligible to be an arbiter of that witness, to be a dayan. That is fairly uncontroversial, and you may not like it, but that is fairly clear in halacha and is not really subject to any debate. Having said which, and you mentioned Dvorah Neviyah, Hashofetet and Neviyah, let's raise her now for the first time. The Sefer HaChinuch comes along and says, number six, don't ask a question from Dvorah. We'll see Dvorah comes up many times in the next half an hour. It says, Hishoftai Israel, she judged the Jewish people. If that's not a clear female judge, what is? He said it could be that the din wasn't decided by her. She was a wise woman, and a neviyah. And they would consult with her. She was a kind of legal consultant. On all matters of Jewish law. But she wasn't a dayanit. That's why it says she shoftei et Yisrael. So, number one, he says, maybe she wasn't a judge, maybe she was the counsel, advisor. Judges often have legal expert advisors to help them understand points of law. Dvorah acted as one of those, maybe, he says. Or Naaman, maybe you could say, shekiblu ladun, maybe she was a judge, but they accepted her as a judge, aleihem, over them. Rashi Yisrael, v'achreihem, okay, kol adam yudon achpia. Meaning, there is a principle in halakha, that even if a person is ineligible as a judge, if you and I go to Beis Din and we turn around and say, well, we don't mind, even though they're technically ineligible, we will be happy to abide by their judgments, then anyone can be a judge. If we insist on the halachic fact, who is eligible to be a judge, okay, they're not eligible. But if we say we don't mind, we don't mind. So maybe they accepted it. Said the Chinuch, said the Kabbalah Badai HaKol K'sherit. Because if both sides accept the judge, then everybody's eligible to be a judge. The cult and I shall be because if we agree on a monetary issue, we agree. And therefore, who cares if the judge is technically be eligible or not? You don't even have to be Jewish, you don't even have to be a man or a woman, you don't have to be whatever. If we agree on someone, they can be our judge. Yes. Like arbitration. You can go to an independent arbitration, and that will have a binding nature in halacha as well, if we both agree that this person will be the arbiter, etc. So maybe that's also what Devorah did. But that can't be a precedent, he's saying, for all future women who might want to be dayanot. Well, Mikol Makam, and here he brings him a qualification. Kol Zeh She'amarnu, everything we've said so far, She'einu Danot, that women can't be dayanot. Who kedat k'sat ha'mafarshim? It's only one view in the mafarshim. Who kedat Yerushalmi and Yerushalmi? She'kein nims to Shem Mufarash. And it's clear from the Yerushalmi that that's a psak. Aval, he says, but, ledat k'sat min ha'mafarshim, k'sheret ha'imadot. Actually, he says, maybe this is what the lady here was referring to, there is a shita in the Rishonim that women are actually qualified lechatchila to be judges, obviously as long as they know what they're saying, they're doing, that goes without saying, kind of a non-qualified shofet of any gender, but a woman is qualified to be a judge, he says. V'amru ki mikra miloi hu, okay, mikra malehu, it is a clear pasuk, he says, shenemar, hi shofta. In other words, he brings from Torah. She was a judge. Our past Poshup Shat, she was a judge. Umashe amru b'Sanhedrin. The kosher einu kosher la'ed, einu kosher la'don. And when he says in Sanhedrin, if you're not kosher to be an aid, then you're not kosher to be a dain. The nashim badai einu k'sheres la'ed, the ha'id. And the for sure women are not kosher to be aid. And that's not a discussion here. So how do you get around that? K'dimuch sham. Eshe sheyamru l'fi datam zeh l'fi she'ein l'meidim l'klamas. There are different principles in halacha. Maybe you can't learn out from some general principles to other specific cases. Maybe you can't make that leap from edut, which is clear, to dayanut, which is a derivation from that. Maybe according to those opinions, that if you like, continuation is not made. V'hanira, but he says, I think min advarim or min asvara, I think from the sources and also from svara she'enum, the Torah, the women are not able to be dayanim, dayanot, could eat for yusham, it says yusham, could amashal if he, gamrim derech. In other words, the chinuch finally concludes that women are not halachically able to be judges, and that indeed is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. But there is another opinion out there, which he rejects, that says that it could be that women are allowed to be dayanim, dayanot, and therefore if we wanted to introduce a system of women dayanot, we would have to now rule like that minority opinion over the halachic consensus, which is clear that women are not allowed to be dayanot. Again, that is not what Beit Hillel, or this latest issue, is raising. They're not suggesting that women be appointed as dayanot. But if one did want to do that, that would be, I think, clearly in the third category, where there is an argument to be made, but one would need to overrule a clear halachic consensus. What Beit Hillel are arguing is that women should be poskot. And let's have a look at that here, and we'll see that is it's very hard, actually, to find any serious source that argues that women cannot be poskot, okay? And therefore it's not terribly difficult to make a halachic case from my understanding that women should be poskot. You're not overturning a halachic consensus against that. The fact is that we just never did it before. Why did we never have women poskot before? Because we never had any qualified women before. But now we do have qualified women. Should we have women poskot? So let's see where the halacha takes us on that. Let's go back to Devorah seriously and see what we can say about her. Number 7. Devorah Isha Nevi'ah. Devorah was a Nevi'ah, said the Psukim. Eshet Lapidot, wife of Lapidot. He shofta et Yisrael ba'etahi. She judged the Jewish people at that time. V'yoshevet tachat tomer. Devorah, she sat under her date palm tree. Bein harama or bein betel. If you go up towards Kochav Yaakov, up towards Nevi Samuel, up there. She sat somewhere up there on one of those hills. You can see it from my house in Harnof, up in that direction. Okay. Behar Ephraim, Beyalue Leha, Bnei Yisrael, Lemishpat. And the Jewish people went to her for judgment. Now, we've already seen the Sefer Chinuch, who wants to argue maybe she wasn't a judge, she was a consultant, etc. But then he says, sounds like she was a judge, and that's already a machloket we've shown him on the judging issue. The Pesukim are very clear that you can't cook a kid in your mother's milk, but it doesn't mean that either. It's also very clear that it says an eye for an eye, and it doesn't mean that either. So to say that a Pesuk is very clear in Halacha is only the beginning of a discussion, not the end of a discussion. On this issue, however, Tosfot comes in very clearly and says the following. Number 8. Umidvairah. From Devorah, Dichsiv, as it says about her, V'hishaftai Yisrael, Ein ra'ya, there is no proof. The Ishak Sheira Ladun. You can't bring a raya that a woman can be a dayanet, as we saw in the Chinuch. This was his preferred position as well. What was she? Shema Loi Haita Dana. She wasn't a dayanet. Ela Haita Melamedet Lahem Hadinim. She was a teacher. She taught them halacha. Now, for the purpose of our discussion now, which is about poskot, Tosfot seemed to say clearly that what the role of Devorah was, it wasn't as a formal judge, that gets into a whole discussion about judges, but she was a halachic teacher. That's what she taught the people. In fact, there's another Tosfot that goes a little bit further, number 9, and says, Devorah loy haita dana, she wasn't a judge, ela milamedet lahem sheyadunu. Not just that she taught the dinim, but she taught the judges how to judge. She was a law professor. Yeah. She was a legal teacher, and she helped the judges understand the halakha, and then they were able to make the judgment. Clearly, Tosfos is coming from a position here which there is no issue, even if she wasn't a judge, she was clearly halakhically qualified to teach the laws or even the judges themselves. In fact, if you fast forward from Dvorah, we haven't finished with it yet, we're going to go back to her later. If you fast forward to the time of the Tanaim, you'll see a very interesting machloket number 10. A tanur, an oven, and we're now asking whether the oven is tahor or tameh. It's pure or impure. Ne'ematai ta'arta. When does it become pure? And if you had an oven that was tame, some sherets went into it, whatever, and the oven was now ritually impure, couldn't be used for truma or kachim and things like that, how do we purify the oven? It's not so easy with an oven. You can't just take it to a mikveh. It's not made from metal. What you have to do is you have to smash it, you have to break it and remake it. That's the only way you can take clay cheres and make them tahor again. This is obviously not so applicable today because we don't have these dinim of tumah and tara. So how do we take this oven and make it tahor? Amar Rav Chalapta, Ish Kfar Chananya. So Rav Chalapta comes along and says the following. Ani sha'alti et Shimon ben Chananya. I asked this question to Shimon ben Chananya. Shishal, and he went and asks, B'noi shall Rabbi Chananya ben Taragim. Okay? He went and asked the son of Rabbi Chananya ben Taragim. The Amar, and the answer he got was as follows. When you move it from its place, if you uproot the oven and you take it from place A to place B, that act of just taking it off the floor and detaching it from its, if you like, housing, that is sufficient to make it tahor. Ubitoi, but Rabbi Chanani ben Taradion's daughter, also known by her first name as Bruria, okay, Omerit, she said, no, that's not correct. That's not the right term. Mishiyashit et chalukim. When you take apart the oven into its constituent parts, only then is it tahor. You have to literally take it apart and put it together again. It's not good enough to pick it up and move it over there. So what happened? Kishinemru Dvarim. So this is Machlokes. Machlokes between Bruri and her brother. Kishinemru Dvarim Lifnei Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So when the matter went to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, what are the Tanaim at the time? Amma, he said, Yafa Amra Bitoi Mipanoi. The daughter's sack is better than the son's. She said right, he said wrong. And the Chubas pick up on this. The Sargent Chubas Binyamin Zay, which is from Greece in the 1500s, he brings the following. The Ashkechen, we find Deisha, Nizkeret, Bebraisa. We find women, a woman at least, mentioned in the Braisa. Becholeket im Atanayim, she's Cholek on the Tanayim, she disagrees with other Tanayim. Behechriu Chachamim Bedvareh, and the rabbis, the ultimate sack, went like her. But Maseches Kelim is the second. Refers to this brayta we see in number 10. Shenitza b'Talmud Isha b'Gvul HaTanayim. He says we find that a woman is one of the Tanayim. Choleket Kidin Tana v'Hoyinu l'Dvara. She disagrees as a Tana, and we pass him like her, and we agree with her rules, with her words. Meaning that the understanding of this Tosefta is that a woman actually was one of the Tanaim in the case of Bruria. And the reason there weren't more Bruria is because there weren't more women educated. Why weren't there more women educated? So that's a discussion that we can talk about as we go through. There clearly was. She was an exception. She was an exception that met an unhappy end. Is her end relevant to her exception? That's a different discussion, which is maybe not for now. But she clearly rules, and we will like her. If you look in the Sefer Achinuch, the Sefer Achinuch that said before the women were not kosher as Dayanim, although he brought another opinion. So he brings in terms of Poskot, in number 12, the Noik Itza Biyat Mikdash V'Shichrut Bizman Habayit V'Shchari Munakeva. He's talking about entering the Bet HaMikdash when a person is drunk, or a person has drunk a certain amount of wine. That is an Itza Doraisa. It applies to men and to women when there's a Bet HaMikdash. But similarly, Mania Tahor Raha, there's a separate Itza, which is not to give psak halacha under the influence of alcohol. I once went for Purim Suda to one of the Dayanim in London. It was a very labored Purim Suda, but the Dayan didn't touch a drop because he said, people come to me and call me at all hours of the day and night and ask for psak halacha on any number of things, and it would be awesome for me to do so under the influence of alcohol, and they need my psak. So he wouldn't drink on Purim. Umanir Torah, if a person wants to not give horah when they're drunk, b'chol makom, b'chol zman b'scharim, this applies to men. V'chein v'isha chachama, similarly to a woman who is qualified, haru'uya lahorot, who is capable of sack. He gives it as a straightforward matter that if a woman is qualified to paskin halacha, then the iser of paskining halacha when under the influence of alcohol applies equally to her as it would to a man. He doesn't even raise a question as to whether a woman is allowed to be a poseket halacha. Look in the Minchat Chinuch, in another place, in number 13, 19th century. Da'afilu chachamim, Ketanim. He's talking about who included in a roiv. We follow the roiv. There's a mitzvah acharei rabim lahasei. There's a mitzvah to follow the majority. So who's included? Who do we include in that majority? Only the greatest rabbis? He says no. Afilu chachamim ketanim mitzdarfim l'roiv. Even the smaller stature rabbis included in the roiv. Imheim chachamim, as long as they are qualified. But I'll just hakel the kankan. Don't look at the outer cover. You can't judge a book by its cover, and you can't, in rabbinic terms, you can't judge a bottle of wine by its bottle. Okay. V'chein nashim chachmaniot. Similarly, women who are wise and qualified. Kmo Dvoira, like Dvoira, she shofetet es Yisrael. V'chein be'ezet din habal shetzarech based in tzrichim based in kosher. Of course, if you need a based in, then you need a kosher based in, and a woman is not going to be on a kosher based in because she's not going to be a dayanet. But in machlokes, when it comes to halachic debates, be'ez davar on any matter, ein shum chiluk. There is no distinction between men and women on this. Rak mishehu chacham chashvin and da'atay. If someone has the qualification and the knowledge, we take them at face value. Yeah, mishayiyah. Whoever they are, b'chinir poshut. It seems obvious to me. He says that there is no distinction, there is no gender reason why a person who is qualified in halacha should be excluded from the halachic process. The Brit Yosef, the Chida, okay, he was born in Yerushalayim, travels a lot around Europe in the 18th century. He says number 14, even though a woman is not allowed to be a dayan, it's very clear, he says, a woman who is a chachama is allowed to pass in halacha, but ken is not. A tosfos, and he brings tosfos, and brings furah, etc. He passes clearly, a woman is allowed to be a poseket. Similarly, the pischei tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch brings the din of the Birke Yosef, number 15, because of the Sifre Birke, he says Birke Yosef, why is your face? Number 15, okay. Af the isha psula ladun, even though a woman may not be a dayanet, mikol makum isha chachama yukhala lahorot ra'ah. It's very hard to find anybody who disagrees with this, as far as I'm aware, and who comes out clearly and says that a woman is not qualified to be a poseket. There is a Magin Abraham that sounds a bit like that. Look at number 16. This is a fascinating question. When a woman lights candles on when Shabbat comes in, so of course it's well known that a woman doesn't make the bracha Shekin Shabbos V'Sabbos V'Vavad Hadik Neshul Shabbos and then strike the match and light the candle. Why not? Because she's mekabel Shabbos. She's accepted Shabbos, and now she's accepted Shabbos by the bracha. She can't light. She can't strike the match. So what do? Women light the candles, cover their eyes. Ilu, they don't get any benefit from the candles, and then they make the bracha, open their eyes, and there's the whole waving thing, which is an interesting thing in and of itself. And that's what they do on Shabbat. The question is, what's on Yom Tov? You can light a candle on Yom Tov as long as it's from an existing flame. You can't strike a new match. But is there any reason why a woman should go through the same procedure on Erev Yom Tov? Why can't she make a bracha, be mekabelet Yom Tov, then take a match and light from a flame and light a candle? You can do that in the middle of Yom Tov. What's the wrong with that? So is that what women do? Or do women do what they do on Shabbat and light first? So let's have a look at this halacha, number 16. So the Shulchan Aruch brings down the different views on this. Achala atacha. The imtavaret kibla l'shabbat. On Shabbos, if she makes a bracha, she's accepted Shabbos. Va'asur, va'asura lahadlik. She's not allowed to then light the candle. Says the Magen Avraham, the in came, therefore it should be beyontav, on yontav. Tzavarach va'achachach tadlik. She should make the bracha, and then light the candles. V'kein kosov v'soy sefer hadrisha. And that's what the drisha, one of the earlier commentators, says. B'shein imoy, in the name of his mother. Who's this? His mother, the Drisha's mother, who he writes about extensively, was a woman called Rabbanit Bela. And the Drisha said his mother had many opinions in halacha on different things, and there are a couple of them he publicizes, and one psak that the Drisha brings in the name of his mother, Rabbanit Bela, is this psak that on Yom Tov, women should first make a bracha, and then light, as opposed to on Shabbos when they light, and then make a bracha. So that psak is known as the psak of Rabbanit Bela. And the Magen Avraham brings up Zach. And then he says, Aval ein chochma leisha. He says, but I'm not accepting that. Ein chochma leisha. He's quoting Gemara, we'll see in a minute. There is no wisdom amongst women. The lo chalka chachamim, because the rabbis never made any distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov. when they talked about the poskim talks about lighting candles. So why is Rabbanit Bela coming along and coming up with a chiddush of her own and making this distinction? Ein chochma l'isha. Who is he quoting? He's quoting the Gemara number 17 in Yoma. Sha'ala isha chachama et Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was asked by an educated woman. In the Chet HaEgel, everybody worshipped the golden calf, and yet their deaths were in different ways. Some died like this, some died in a plague, some died, etc., etc. Why did they have different deaths if they all did the Israel of Avodah Zarah, whatever it was? Amalai said to her, "Ein chochma le'isha ela b'penach." A woman's wisdom is in weaving. It's in what? Not weaving. It's spinning. This is someone who doesn't like the shir. A woman's wisdom is only spinning. Don't ask me questions. Go away and spin. By the way, Rabbi Eliezer is the same Rabbi Eliezer that rules in halacha that it's osur for a person to teach women Torah because they will take the Torah, certainly with Torah Shebaal Peh, and turn it to tiflus and make it into something which is not correct because of the fact that they don't have the doubt to understand it properly. We'll talk about that in a minute when we get to the Rambam. But the Magen Avraham says, I don't accept the psak of Rabbanit Bela, and it sounds like one of the reasons is because she is a woman. So if you want to come up with a negative opinion that says women should not pasken halacha, maybe you could use this Magen Avraham, who doesn't seem to agree with what we've seen before. However, the poskim don't like this Magen Avraham. Have a look at number 18. Rav Avadi Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. The Kepasaka Rav Yuzba, the Noisha Laprisha, the Shem Imoy Rabbanit. He brings a sack of the Rabbanit, of Rabbanit Bela. Lechalek b'min hagam ben brikat neirot shabbat lebrikat neirot. The women do make a distinction. And I wonder if we took a straw poll, which of the people in this room do make and which don't make a distinction. Who does it a different way around than Yom Tov? So a lot of people don't do it a different way around the answer. So Rav Avadia turns around and says, he brings the psak of Rabbanit Bela. V'afal pisha ha-Magen Avraham katav alea, even though the Magen Avraham writes about Rabbanit Bela, she'ein chochma le'isha ela b'pelech. There's no wisdom of women apart from spinning. The loy plug Rabbanan ben Shabbos, because he points out the rabbis didn't make any specific distinction between Shabbos and Yom. So who is Rabbanit Bela to make that distinction? Says Rav Avadia, no, mikol makom kfar hiskimu ha'achronim. The haskama, the consensus of the achronim, lidibri ha'rabbanit, is like the rabbanit, like Rabbanit Bela, shehi isha asher nasa'a liba b'chumah. And he seems that he very clearly rejects the Magen Avraham and says the fact that she happens to be a woman is neither here nor there. She is a person who is qualified, and she was qualified to issue a psak of this nature, and the consensus of the poskim after her is to follow her psak and not to follow the position of the Magen Avraham.
It don't make a difference, and he said that it should not be women who make the bracha after the right. The bracha of Atala. I heard him say that.
Really? That's very interesting. He's very strong on the matter. And you see that the position of the Rabbanim HaRashim in Israel, the chief rabbis throughout the generations, have passed them pretty clearly, both Sephardi and Ashkenazi, that women are halachically allowed to be poskot halacha. Look at some of these sources I brought you, 19 here. At number 19, this is Rav Ben-Zion Uziel, who was the chief rabbi parallel to Rav Kook in the 1930s. V'gam, the Tzutzam HaShem, is Yishuv with HaTosfos, the Ein Ish HaKasher Ladun. Even according to the opinion of Tosfos, it says that women cannot be judges. HaKasver, he said, Inam Ish HaHaita Melamedet. He brings the Tosfos, says that Deborah was a teacher. What it tells us that Anu Muchrachim Loima, we are forced to therefore conclude, Kikimash Ne'ema Meyalu Alea B'nei Yisrael Mishpat, when it says that the Jewish people went to her for Mishpat, Shehayu Zkukim Lehora Ateha HaMishpatiyot. She wasn't just teaching, she was giving hora'ah. She was giving psak halacha on these mishpatim. She wasn't a dayanit, but she was giving psak halacha. Upsulta shel aisha lefi teretzah. And therefore the ineligibility of a woman, according to this, who rak lekabel hata'anot v'ha'eduyot, is only to act as the judge and accept the testimony and conduct the court proceedings. Aval hik shera liyot shofetet, she is allowed to be a judge, muvan shel murah, She's allowed to be the decisor of the sack. There are just certain technical things that she's not allowed to do in the court proceedings. Yes?
I don't know how this is going to be up.
Okay, so we'll see that soon. Okay. That is one answer which is brought, but you see, that is just one of the many answers. Tosfos doesn't bring this answer here. It doesn't say. He could have just ended the whole discussion. She was going to be out. End of story. Different from everybody else. You see from the fact that the Rishonim and the Achronim are bringing Dvorah as a discussion in this issue of women giving psak halakha shows that they're not learning like that. Otherwise there'd be nothing to talk about. You're 100% right, but this whole discussion is assuming that you're 100% wrong on that, if you know what I mean. Well, although we'll see that opinion is brought in the Rishonim as well. Look at number 20. This is Rav Herzog. The Harikaimalan, he says, we paskan. She'isha ru'uya lahoros hara'a. A woman is allowed to be a moira hara'a. V'loi chalku bein hara'a b'dvarim pshutim. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about simple matters, okay? Or kashim, or complicated matters, or bein d'oraita l'drabonon. Makes no difference whether it's d'oraita drabonon. V'in k'sharahi lahora'a, i'efsha la'achlish she'da'atan da'at klishta. Says, if a woman is allowed to be a posekid alacha, you can't turn around and tell me that women have less mental capabilities than men. Not at all. If she is kosher to be a poisek, Shema mina, we can learn from that. Shebalat dat slulahi v'loy pachot meish. Not pachot meish. Rav Bakshi Doron, in number 21, who of course was the Sephardi chief rabbi, says, Mikol ha'amur nira she'isha v'ger yucholim l'shamesh kemanigim. Okay, well, I'm not getting into that now. We'll get into that in a minute. Afilu k'gidoyle hador. Women can be g'doyle hador. Because it's their qualification, if you like, that is what justifies their position. Isha, Fager, Yucholim, the Shamesh, Morei Hora'a, a woman, I'm not getting into the issue of a ger, we'll see how that comes in a minute. A woman is allowed to be a Morei, to pass in Halacha, Ulamed Torah, Psakim, and to teach Torah and Psak. Okay? Tavkidim. Because areas where the qualification is based on the ability of the candidates, in other words, if it's just an issue of who is qualified, gender is irrelevant. A man or a woman can be able to take it halacha. I brought you number 22 from Machon Harry Fishel. They came out with this psak many years ago. Muteret ha'isha l'shavet etel shemesh etel adayanim lahorat lehem hadinim mamishpatim habayim lifneim, etc., etc. Even in the more charedi world, I brought you a section from number 23 from the book Halichot Beita. Not Halichos Beit Yisrael, that's a different sefer. Halichos Beita, which is written by Rav David Albach, the nephew of Rav Shlomo Zalman Albach. He writes as follows in his sefer. Isha chachama habekiya b'halacha, a woman who is qualified in halacha, mutar la lahorot. She is allowed to be a poseket, ach psulahi miladun. She's just ineligible to be a judge. And therefore, I think you'd have to really work very hard to find an opinion that says against what the Rabbanei Beit Hillel came out with last Friday. I'm certainly not aware of any significant opinion that says that. That doesn't, of course, mean the women should be poskot halakha. That's a different discussion, and one can have that discussion in a different framework. But in terms of the halakha, it seems pretty clear that there is no halachic impediment to that. I would bring down the point about the Rambam, which is Rabbi Eliezer, who paskin that you shouldn't teach women Torah. I bring down two halachas in the Rambam, which we'll need to know about. Number 24, the Rambam paskins that a woman is allowed to learn allowed to learn Torah, but then he brings in the second line, even though she has a reward for learning Torah, Tzivu chachamim shaloi yilamed adam es bito Torah mitnei sheroi hanashim. A woman is not, most women, he says, most women are not able, they do not have the ability to learn Torah. Therefore, the Chachamim made a psak halacha that a person shouldn't teach Torah to women, because since most women don't have the ability to analyze the Torah correctly, it'll only lead to a little knowledge being a dangerous thing. The Rambam elsewhere says very clearly when he's talking about learning Torah Shebal Peh, number 25, The Apple Pishad Barim Elu Dover Cotton, he's comparing it to philosophy and Masib Reshit Masib Merkava. Even though learning Gemara and Torah is called a small thing, Kara Asam Chachamim, Shehari Amru Chachamim, they said, Dover Godl Masib Merkava, Dover Cotton Havaisa Baibarova. Even though they called the analysis of Torah a quote-unquote small thing compared to a Masib Merkava, Masib Reshit. Afal Pikein, nevertheless, Ru'in Heim Lahakdiman, a person should always learn Torah, the revealed Torah first. Shehem Yashvim Dasa Shal Adam Tchila, because this clarifies a person's mind. The Eshashi Adam Hakol, everyone can access Torah. Cotton, Begadol, Ish, the Isha, Balle, Rachav, Balis. The Rambam clearly rules in Yisrael HaTorah that there's no reason in principle why a woman can't master Torah. So why is he saying in Hilchot Talmud Torah, Chachamim made a psak, you're not allowed to teach women Torah because most women can't handle Torah? Because it's a reality. It's a matter which is descriptive rather than prescriptive. It's clear from what he says in Hilchot Yisrael HaTorah that there's no reason in principle why women cannot become equally qualified in Torah. It's just it wasn't that way. And therefore that's, on the basis of that argument, in the 20th century, the whole Beis Yaakov movement overturned the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, which shows that it's osur to teach women Torah, Shibichtav, or Torah Shabbateh, even Chumash Rashi. The Shulchan Aruch clearly says a person shouldn't teach women. Why? Because of this idea that most women aren't qualified. Comes along the 20th century, the Chofetz Chaim get ready, etc., and says that's not true anymore. That's just not true anymore. Today, women are qualified in other areas. There is an imperative to teach women Torah, and therefore, women are taught Torah on a high level in all areas of Jewish society, from the most Haredi to the most progressive or left-wing or whatever you want to call it. Women are taught Torah on a mass level. Now, the extension from that to a woman being a poseket in halacha seems to be, on technical terms, a fairly small one. Because there is no distinction between a woman learning Torah and a woman ruling in halacha in that Torah that she learned. I would add one other thing, which is the Shulchan Aruch says clearly in source number 26, that something only has a din of a hora, of a psak, if it's complex. Look at number 26. Loi mikri hora, says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't even need a smicha for the following. You only need smicha elo shemoyre al masa shebalafanav. If you're passing on something that comes before you as a question. But in Shalu to Talmud, halacha kidibrine. But if you're asking someone who's teaching halacha, what is the in principle, in theory, what is the halacha? Yochel loyma masa shebedasa. You don't need a smicha to be a halacha teacher. You don't need to be a poisek to be someone who explains halacha. That's clear. So even if you were to say, we don't want a woman to be a poseg, there's certainly no reason why a person can't be an expert in halacha. In chet, lo mikre hora ela b'dama she'esh bo chidush v'shoel. A thing is only called psak if there's a chidush by the person who asks. Ava b'hora yadua. But if it's a known issue, she'hi pshuta l'kol, that everybody knows, kagoy noisin tam nifgam, like basic mistakes or errors in Hilchos Kashrus, I drop my fleshy spoon in my milky bowl, etc. Or the bottle is the b'shishim, or bottle b'shishim, musa. Meaning, everybody knows this. If somebody comes up to you on Shabbos and says to you, how do I make a cup of tea on Shabbos? You don't turn around to them and say, well, I'm a woman, I'm not allowed to pass in halacha, you have to go ask a man. No one ever said that. You say, no, use a kirushin, use a cliche, use a cliche. Why? You're a rabbi. No, because that's not called psak. That's something which is obvious, which everybody knows. As long as you know basic halacha, and you're qualified to be a halachically observant Jew, you know the answers to questions like that. That's not called psak at all. And similarly, in Teth, he says, Yesh misha kosov, shekolak kosov the svarim. If something is available in the basic svarim, ipiski agoinim, yochel ahiris be a rabbi. That's not called psak either. So, even if you are into this question as to what women should or shouldn't do, before you get into the issue of psak, you have to understand what psak is. Many things that are being ruled on and taught are not really halakhically called psak at all. There's of course something which is obvious that no one, this person doesn't need a smicha at all to rule upon. And what's more, if there are people who are capable of giving psak and they don't give psak, that's a problem as well. Have a look at this source in number 27. In number 27 we see a pasuk being analyzed by the Gemara in Sota. Here's one. The Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. My said, why does it say in Mishlei ki rabim chalalim hipila va'atzumim kol harugeha, that so many people have fallen by the way and many are those who she has killed? Who is that talking about? Ki rabim chalalim hipila ze talmid chacham shaloi higia lahoi ra'umoya. It's a disaster, says the Gemara, if people who are not qualified to rule in halacha nevertheless rule in halacha. That's a disaster. Va'atsumin kol harugeha, but equally a disaster, says the Gemara, is zetam en chochem shehegiya lahora ve'ein amoyah. Someone who has the ability to be a moira ha'ra, but refuses to do so, that is also very serious. Meaning there is no safe option. If we have people who are qualified to be poskim, and perhaps poskot, but they don't do so, that's not called necessarily a safe option either. Look at the last page, and then we'll sum up with some general thoughts. There is a whole different halachic area which we haven't even touched on yet, which is, leaving aside the technical issue of psak, these areas, and as I said in my first year, are not just about technical issues. They're about bigger issues as well. They're about the direction in which you want the halachic system to move, and the way that you want the Jewish community to function, and whether there are different agendas working in different directions. And I, and please don't get me wrong in any way, I'm not standing here in any sense as someone who is capable or qualified to issue any opinion on the matter whatsoever. I'm just learning the issues with you. The senior poskim of the generation will have to decide who is appropriate to be a posek or a poseket, and who is not. Although I would say that unlike some of the issues which have come out on things like partnership minyanim and different tefillah groups and women's tefillin, etc., etc., there are two major differences between that issue and the poseket halacha issue. The two major differences are as follows. Number one, the issue, let's say, of women's tefillin is in category number three, meaning we're trying to overturn an established halachic consensus, or counting women to get aliyot on Shabbat morning is going against a halachic consensus, even if you want to make a case for it. Whereas a woman being a poseket halacha seems to be going in the stream of halacha, it's very hard to find anyone who actually says that's asur, as long as the person is qualified. That's a very, very big difference. And secondly, the rabbi, yes?
But aliyot in a woman's minyan, what is negative?
I'm talking about aliyot in a mixed minyan. I'm talking about a partnership minyan. I'm not talking about a women's only tefillah. I'm talking about a partnership minyan where the women get aliyot and there are men in the minyan as well, etc., etc. That no senior posek has said is acceptable. The second big difference is, of course, as follows. The rabbi Bet Hillel, even though a person might disagree with them and not follow that particular stream, they want to try and be centrist in the religious Zionist world, there are amongst them very many senior Talmidei Chachamim. These are not just junior guys 3 years out of their smicha program, wherever it was, who've decided that they should have a this or a that. These are very thought through senior rabbanim, and you can go online, you can find out who they are. And they may not be maybe the Gedolei Hador, whatever that means, but their opinion has to be taken seriously as a halachic opinion, and cannot just be dismissed as someone who is not qualified to express a halachic opinion on these matters. I think that is a very big difference as well. Whereas those other issues are not being paskened by people on that level of status, that's very clear. Look at this last issue in the last 3 or 4 minutes, and let us conclude with that. There is a separate issue, which is a woman allowed to be a community leader? And this is more the issue of women rabbis, rather than just poskei halacha, but they intertwine. There is a principle in halacha, number 28, these are quite short sources, we'll see them very quickly. There's a mitzvah to appoint a king over the Jewish people, says the Seich HaZayin, number 29, melech v'loy malka. They learn that you can only have a halachic king, you can't have a halachic queen. Comes along the Gemara to Kiddushin and learns this pasuk and says, "Sam tasim alecha melech, not just the king, but kol mitzim asher atam etim lo yeh ele mikrev achicha." So not only a king, but any community leadership position is comes out of this pasuk as well. The Chazal, the Midrash Naim in number 31, learned this to apply to the male-female issue as well. A woman cannot be a community leader. And the Rambam rules this way, number 32, Eima midim ishba malchus, you are not allowed to appoint a woman to the monarchy. Shenema alecha melech v'loy malcha. V'chein kol mesima shel Yisrael, any public position in Jewish people, ein mamanim behem ela ish. Has to be a male, not a woman, a man, not a woman, who leads that community position. There are a number of questions which are raised from Dvorah, once again. What was Torah? And the answers that come are similar answers that we saw before. I'm not going to go through them all. Either she wasn't a leader, she was a teacher, she was a poseket, which people seem to feel unremarkable. Maybe she was alpine voix, that's one of the reasons it's brought down, therefore she's an exception. But everyone wants to say that Deborah is not a question on this issue. She doesn't offend this rule. However, there's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, number 36, which I'm not going to go through in detail. He was asked whether a woman who was a widow, whose husband was in charge of a kashrus organization, was allowed to take that over and become, if you like, a community leader in that sense that she's in charge of this significant organization. And he writes there as follows. He says, even though the Rambam's position is normative, and there are many others that go like him, that a woman cannot be a community leader because of nevertheless, he brings a whole host of people who disagree with that and say that that is not the halacha, Tosfos and many others, and says even though we don't follow that position, generally speaking, maybe one could rely on that minority position in a situation of need, that a woman would be allowed to be appointed as a community leader. And indeed, there has been a lot of shift on this position in most communities, or many communities, not most, over the last 30, 40 years. Whereas in England, I know for it used to be the case that the Beit Din in London ruled that a woman was not allowed to be the president of a community, only the vice president. That ruling was changed a few years ago, and now women are permitted to be presidents of community, because this is an issue on which there is a genuine machloket in the poskim. And even though there was perhaps a consensus, that consensus may be being overturned in some ways because of the changing nature of women in society, etc., which again doesn't allow us to overturn one and two in the categories I said before, but three and certainly four, there is something to talk about there. So let's get back to the question and then see if we can sum up. Can women give rulings in halakha? I think the answer to that, as far as I'm concerned and aware, is yes, as long as they're suitably qualified, which applies to everybody. Should women give rulings in halakha is an entirely different question. It involves hashkafa. It involves societal issues. There are many societies clearly in which this will be inappropriate. The postmen talk about issues of tzniut. Now, we haven't mentioned the word tzniut yet, but I would mention it now, and it is relevant. When Rav Kook was asked about women taking leadership positions and voting in the early 20th century, they raised this issue of tzniut as a relevant question. But tzniut is terribly subjective in many ways. There are certain objective principles of tzniut, but when Rashi describes Das Yehudit in the Gemara in Suvot as the origin of the dinim of tzniut, he said it is based in minhag, meaning it is community specific. And we all know that there are certain things that are in different communities are deemed appropriate or inappropriate depending on the community. There are some communities where a woman would not give a Dvar Torah at the Shabbos table. There are other communities where women will give a Dvar Torah in front of the shul on Shabbos morning and give a drasha in the community. And clearly the tzniut angle is not a blunt weapon that can be used on this issue to say that it's not sanua for a woman to be a poseket. It really depends on the community and what the role of the women in that community is, women who are sensitized to this issue of tzniut, and therefore it really will depend. And tzniut is a big topic which I do have a lot to say about, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. Let me just finish with one source, in number 37, which I think is very beautiful and should perhaps be something that inspires us. Of course, ultimately the decision on this issue of poskot halakha will need to be made by the senior leaders of our community. They are the people who determine the direction of the halakhic system. But this source, I think, should leave us with something to think about. Number 37, Devora ish and Nevi'ah. But Kimati Michelle Devora, why was Devora chosen to be the leader? Whatever she was, whether she was a leader, whether she was a judge, whether she was a teacher, whether she was a law professor, whatever she was, why was she chosen? Okay. Shaftet Yisrael mitnabeit aleihem. V'haloi Pinchas ben Elazar Emet. There was a perfectly qualified man waiting in the wings called Pinchas ben Elazar. Why wasn't he the leader? Why was she the leader, not him? Which is an interesting question, says Eliyahu Rabba here. Meid ani. Alive ala shamayim va'ata'at. He says, I want to tell you now that I want to give, I swear, he says, there's a source here. Bein goy, whether the person is a non-Jew, bein Israel or a Jew, bein ish, whether they're a man, bein isha or a woman, bein eved, whether they're a slave, bein shifcha or a servant, female servant, hakol lefi ma'ashe she'oiseh. It's all dependent on their actions. Kach ruach hakodesh shere alav. If a person is a shem shamayim, if a person is motivated by the right issues, then it doesn't matter who they are, says this source, it doesn't matter what their status is, it doesn't matter what their gender is. Obviously that doesn't mean that we believe in equality in that sense, and I'm not saying that, and this source is not saying that. But on a certain level, if a person is motivated, the ruach hakodesh will be shere on them. Devora, it says here, aleah ba'al kiyotzeba ba'al hadoimasla, on her, and on people like her, va'al ha'esik ma'aseh, those who want to emulate her, who know about them, it says, chochmas nashim banta beisa. Not a chochma isha elevapela. But this all says, chochmas nashim banta beisa, that the chochma of women can be something which is a foundation for Beis Yisrael. And this is something that we need to grapple with now that we have a whole generation of people who are becoming more and more qualified, how to integrate that in a way which is authentic, which uses that talent to the best of its ability and to the best purposes of the community. We'll need to grapple with that, not just today, but for many, many years ahead. Please God, we should have the Ruach HaKodesh to do that correctly. Thank you.